It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business. Midlands 103.
Hello and good evening. You're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103 with me, Ronan Berry, coming up between now and 8pm. I'm sure many of you listening have heard an ad on a radio or seen a product or heard about a product described and decided, I need to get my hands on that, I need to buy that. And you've probably gone and looked it up online or done a little bit of research or maybe even there and then placed an order for that very product or service. Well, imagine if you bought a business in that way, having heard about it first on a radio station. Tune in a little bit later to find out exactly how that happened, because two local companies were involved in that. It's a wonderful story, so that'll be coming to you very, very shortly. Also, is lithium mining actually something that might happen very close to the Midlands? We'll find out a little more about that later too. And also, woodlandsfarmshop.ie, they've just opened in Ballacolla with lambs so local that you can see the sheds from the shop. So that's really, really kind of reducing that journey from farm to fork there. Owner of that new store, Bernard Hennessy, will be along around 7:30 to tell you all about that too. If you want to get in touch with me this evening, please do so, as always, on 083 3010 103 by text or WhatsApp. That, of course, is powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, Arden Road, Tullamore. And I'd really, really love to hear from you this evening, because to start off this evening, we're going to talk a little bit about jargon. And when I talk about jargon, I mean in a corporate sense, in a business sense. And if I was to ask you, how effective is your digital branding at accentuating your competencies for strategic execution of your mission, vision and values by incorporating blue sky thinking and cutting edge innovation to not only deliver your strategic objectives but to enhance every aspect of your society and the community you live in? And I could continue and go on for hours, but I know a lot of you listening are probably reading stuff like that on a daily basis. You're probably reading about it on different websites, on social media content, even in business newspapers too. Jargon and corporate speak is everywhere around us. Now, interestingly, in New Zealand, there is currently a new bill going before government there. It's called the Plain Language Bill, and it seeks to make it a legal requirement that text in public documents should be easily understood by the intended reader after one reading. The legislation has already passed its second reading, though it'll need to face a final vote before it becomes law. So quite interesting to hear that it's actually looking at making it almost legally binding, that you have to remove jargon and maybe over-the-top corporate speak, particularly from government documentations. You can understand why, if it has to be read by a reader and it should be understood and not necessarily just somebody who may be somewhat familiar with that language. But that brings us back to that kind of key point. How important is it to get the language correct and indeed write and target it towards a specific audience on your company's website in whatever aspect you use it, be it an e-commerce website or if you're just trying to sell a service, that will also then filter down into your social media presence and how you really try to showcase what you do so well. To try to shed some light on this, I'm delighted to be joined by somebody who, in fairness to him, rarely goes near jargon. He talks very straight. He makes a good point. It's Darren Doyle from Studio 93 in Moat. They're a creative agency. Darren, jargon, corporate speak, is it something you come across every day in your line of work?
Hey, Ronan. Well, I was going to say, you obviously took that intro directly off of the homepage on my website. Yeah, look, we come across it, and obviously we're going to have a quick discussion about why it, you know, stay away from it. But I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, because as I was kind of thinking about this topic when you reached out to me there a couple of days ago, I actually think there's a place and a time for jargon.
Really?
And you see, jargon has a negative connotation, and I heard it in your voice in the intro as well. I think there's a place for it, and I'll give you an example of this in a minute, but I actually think jargon is a very efficient way of communicating when it's two people within the same industry. Okay?
Okay.
I'll give you an example of this. So typically, you know, we do a lot of web work, and anyone who's set up a website knows that one of the first things that has to happen is you have to sort out your hosting and maybe your domain registration, and you use any number of web hosting companies. There's lots of them out there. And often my clients may be trying to do that part themselves, and I'll often say, listen, let me talk to them, let me organise that for you. This is an example of a real conversation I would have with someone on the other end in this situation. Hi, John, Darren here, web developer. I just want to help my client set up their hosting account. So, John, listen, what we need to do is we have the domain registered. We just need you to set up an Apache server for me. I'm going to need PHP 5, and we're going to need to sort out the DNS. The DNS records aren't right. As well as that, now I mentioned the PHP, we're going to need 3 email servers set up as well. Is that okay? Now, John would turn around and go and instantly know exactly what he has to do, right? So that's an example of jargon being used in the right context between two people who speak the same language.
Okay, now, jargon or technical language?
Yeah, well, okay, well, that's a good point. But you hear what I mean. I think the thing is, with jargon, it's almost a different way of speaking. And I think, even when I think of clients over the years when we've worked on projects and if they've been guilty of using jargon, like, I think, can I honestly say all of them, 99% of them, they're actually just not aware. It's not a conscious thing to speak jargon. It's just the way that they speak about, you know, things to do with their own industry that they deal with and talk to other people in the industry every single day. So it's hard for them to switch.
Could also be something maybe used to mask, maybe if somebody is just maybe a little bit underconfident about what they're going to speak about, maybe, or maybe a little bit unsure. So we maybe tend to fill that gap with words that we know are maybe synonymous with the industry we're in, perhaps.
I love this. Another use of jargon is to actually sometimes is to make something sound a little bit more, I don't know, special than it is. And I love the example of, if you think of Starbucks, other coffee suppliers are available. They don't say a small coffee, a big coffee. They say grande, and they say tall. That's jargon as well, but that's jargon being used to try and make something sound a little bit more fancy.
I found another one I'm going to throw at you as well, and this is from a very, very famous British band, and it says, for their upcoming tour, we have set ourselves a science-led, and I quote you, target of 50% reduction in our CO2 emissions using the absolute contraction method. The band said, now we're still talking apparently about carbon emissions here, we pledge to draw down any unavoidable emissions according to the Oxford Principles for Net Zero Aligned Carbon Offsetting. This is what rock and roll is meant to be these days. And it just, look at, again, you see this, it's Coldplay. I think people will probably guess that fairly quickly. And it's probably genuine, but to me, it's just smacks of jargon too. So when it comes back to it, right, yes, there clearly are uses for jargon. You make a great point there. But for communicating to the general public, what do businesses need to be looking at and, I suppose, maybe looking to avoid?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, jargon is something that we should avoid. Now, I again, thinking about this, I think a lot of this comes down to is the idea of empathy, right? On some level, are you able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and become them for a couple of minutes, okay? Now, I've had to do this with clients over the years, over 16 years, and it has amazed me that, like, some people are very good at this, some people are okay, and some people are incapable of doing this, are incapable of leaving their body and going into their customer's body and looking at the world and reading text or listening to a video or whatever it is and listening to it from their shoes. And that's where the problem, a lot of the problem comes, is because they find it hard to, again, that empathy piece. And here's, Ronan, an area where this causes a big problem for websites in particular, because we'll talk about SEO. Now, I'm going to start using jargon here. So search engine optimization is basically how we rank on Google.
It could be a sector of employment order either.
Oh, very, very
so
good,
again,
yes.
Yeah, so, again, industry specific.
Fair point. Often when clients are talking to me about SEO and they're wondering how to get themselves up in for search, and we'll talk about, well, what search phrases do you want to come up for? What do you want to come up for? And they might say, I don't know, I can't think of something off the top of my head, but it would be a piece of jargon that they know, it's native to them because it's stuff that, but that's not what the user is looking for. That's not what my mother, hi ma'am, that's not what my mother is putting into Google. She's putting in something very straightforward, like, I should have thought of an example, but she's not putting the jargon in. But the client is thinking and writing and communicating in terms of jargon. And so that's a problem in terms of SEO then, because what your clients and your people, your customers are searching for, just the terminology and the language is not the jargon. So then if you're in your website, it's full of jargon, you're not going to be found in search.
Which is kind of really, it harks back to exactly what they seem to be trying to achieve in New Zealand, is you've got these government communications, you know, strategic documents, and if they're containing language that the general public don't understand. It's not certainly not going to buy many votes. But again, it's almost like that, you say you're searching with a very generic term or what it means to you. But if your website then is just full of all these jargon terms then. So what do? Do you strip it back? Is it all just like a focus groups to try to find out exactly? Or is it some of that stemming to maybe a business owner being too busy to really focus on it, or maybe just not being fully aware of what their value proposition is?
What I always, again, when I'm working my own clients on this, is I try to like what you said, strip it back, strip it back. Explain to me what you do, and you have to be able to explain it to me in such a way that, I don't know, maybe a 5 or 6 year old could get the gist. They don't have to fully understand it, but they could get the gist of what I do as a company, a 5 or 6 year old. So if we can bring it back, if we can strip it all back down, then we can build it up a little bit more if you want, but it's about stripping it back to the basics and then building it up, rather than starting up at the top and then like trying to pull it back down. Does that make sense?
So strip it back to the basics and maybe find that key message, that key, that almost that elevator pitch, as the Americans would call it.
It's just about knowing your audience, because again, I'll often ask clients if I feel that they're in danger of too much jargon. I'll always say, because it's okay to have the jargon if your audience understands the jargon. It's kind of like what I said at the beginning. If it's two people in the same profession and they're jargoning back and forward, as long as they understand each other, that's fine. The problem becomes when one of those people is potentially at a different level in terms of their knowledge of a subject, but they're trying to communicate to someone who's on a lower level, and that's not disparaging content. We're all at different levels of our understanding in lots of different areas.
Does social media help kind of bridge that gap? Is a website traditionally more jargon filled, more kind of, you know, business corporate speak, and social media allows you to communicate directly with people, or is that just a myth?
I don't think so, because they're all just mediums for communication. And for me, if we're talking in marketing speak here, and again, I'll try and not use jargon, what we're talking about there is your brand voice. So how do you sound and how do you communicate? What is the type of language you use? And that should be kind of uniform across your website, your social media, video content, a tone of voice and a way that you communicate. So I think to say, is social media better at communicating? It's not. It's just another vehicle, but your language and the stripped back version of the no jargon, it just applies to all of them equally. Does that make sense? Am I explaining myself there?
No, I think you make a good point as well. It's not necessarily communicating to different people. It's just another means, another mechanism that's there, because I suppose different social media channels, the content can be tailored to suit those. And I suppose that's bringing into the space that Studio 93 work in, really. You are content creators. And I have your website open in front of me right now, and I'm going to give you top marks for this one. Basically, big tagline: marketing is a contest for people's attention. We ensure you win every time. That's to the point, and I think that's exactly it. So the proof is in the pudding there. But just take us through the services that you currently are offering and how it's developed over the years, particularly maybe since the start of the pandemic.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for that, Ronan. Yeah, content creation, is, as you say, is a big one. And I spoke to you just before the interview here. We spent a whole day over in Athlone doing a lot of video content for a big event over there. So we do, you know, a lot of video stuff, and then carrying that through then to social media and then through to websites. So it's all about communicating your message, whatever the message is, in a very clear and concise way to the right people. And that's also important. A little plug there as well. We've got our own podcast. So if you're not listening to Midlands 103 and you've got some extra time, check out our podcast, and you can get that on our website. We have 16 episodes up there now where we talk about more marketing stuff.
And that website is very simple. It's Studio 93. That's the number 93.ie. And you can check it out. Darren and his team, they're based in Moat. Darren, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you for much, and for keeping it to the point and no jargon as well. There'll be no more in the rest of the show, but thanks, Darren.
Thanks, Ron.
It might be getting close to Halloween, but I promise you, there's no scary stories on this evening's show. I mean, we've had weeks, you could even say years, of almost nearly negative stories, but with COVID and Brexit and then energy crises and all that type of stuff. But no, all very upbeat and positive tonight. Again, testament great local business across the Midlands. Still to come, a brand new farm shop has opened in Ballacolla, County Laois. And later on, we might just hear why lithium mining, you know, may become a thing very, very close to the Midlands. Who knows? Find out why a little bit later in the show. First, I'm going to bring you back to about a year ago. On the show here, I had a man called Shane Murphy. He'd set up a business called One Stop Fulfillment in Port Laois. And it was really a game changer for not just local businesses, but businesses across the region and even beyond. And effectively what it did was, if you were selling a particular product, rather than you do all the packaging yourself and then have to go and bring that to a courier, this would, you would actually put your product into Shane's warehouse and they would do all the picking, the packing, all the postage, even arranging deliveries outside of normal hours for you. Really innovative service, really modelling what some of the big companies like Amazon, etc. do, but doing so on a local level for local businesses. It was a company that would undoubtedly catch your attention, and I suppose timing was great for them, particularly with so much online sales being, you know, rising so much during those years of COVID. Well, one business that caught the attention of was Camsaw, the Camsaw Group in Port Arlington, and it was set up in 1987 with just four employees working from the family's garage. At age 18, Paul Carney took over the running of the business from his father, Philip, in around 2005. Now, he and his wife, Frances Quinn, have overseen its growth to a turnover of €13 million with a team of 19 people, based out of a 40,000 square foot warehouse recently. And rumour has it that listening to radio one day, Paul heard Shane from One Stop Fulfillment talking and doing an interview and decided to check out the business and indeed ultimately buy the business. Paul, that's some introduction. Is that how it happened? Was it that easy?
You make it sound very simple anyway, Ronan, for sure. But yeah, I suppose I did hear Shane speaking on radio back about 18 months ago or so. And I have to say, it definitely tweaked my attention at the time. It took a while for the purchase of it to happen, but yeah, I think it was officially in August of this year we purchased a 80% stake in One Stop Fulfillment. So yeah, it was.
I suppose we need to set a bit of background as well for the listeners. Just tell us what Camsaw do, and I suppose it might become obvious why One Stop Fulfillment became of such interest to you.
So Camsaw is a distributor of garden machinery. Been selling garden machinery in Ireland since the 80s. Established by my father, Philip, and we wholesale garden machinery across the 32 counties. But I suppose to simplify it, we move boxes. You know, we sell a lot of product, but to provide a good service to our customers, we move boxes every day. And I think when I first read about One Stop Fulfillment or heard about One Stop Fulfillment, I believed that this business had a real synergy and alliance with what Camsaw does. So, and being a business owner and hungry to grow the business, I ended up having a conversation with Shane a few months after that, and we decided to purchase the business, you know.
What do you think was the key moment for you? Were you experiencing maybe some issues, some pain points with your existing distribution systems?
No. In fact, quite the opposite, actually. We had gone through a large growth period for the previous couple of years, and our systems were running very, very well. And I think I could identify, when I first spoke to Shane, I could identify with a lot of the pain points he had, being a business only 3 years old and growing very, very fast. I was in that position a few years before that, you know. So I think we hit it off, and we could identify with each other what the issues that he was having, and I suppose I felt like I could bring a lot of solutions to the table, ultimately to grow One Stop into a bigger entity, you know. So it's something that aligns perfectly from our point of view, you know.
You've taken 80% shareholding in it. Obviously, Shane retains the other 20%, and actually Shane stays on as MD, so you're not losing that talent pool and that knowledge either.
Correct. That's very important for us, yeah. Shane has a lot of experience in the business, so he does, and the industry, something that I don't have, and I can see the value in that simply because I've grown up in the garden machinery industry and know that the intricacies of the industry to allow us grow. And for me, fundamentally, without Shane, it wasn't really very attractive for us, because we can bring him what we've established, I suppose, in Camsaw, particularly over the last 10 or 15 years, is a great management team, a great team of people from operations to finance to warehousing and purchasing. So I felt that we could sort of wrap that around the business and really give it a great platform to grow, you know.
And do you see the growth with One Stop as being mainly organic and just due to increasing demand, or can you see for yourselves at Camsaw maybe even more a more rapid part service for delivery? Like, how do you see achieving those growth levels that you hope to get?
you know, one of the big things from a business point of view that I've done in Camso is introduce technology. You know, we invest heavily in technology, in ERP systems, warehouse management systems, and that's where I believe the first fundamental growth can happen, by introducing these systems and structures into One Stop to make it to offer a better service to our customer, to make it more transparent and bring it online, in terms of customers can place their orders for what they want to go out directly through our portal and that type of thing. So initially the investment will take place around technology and systems, and that will definitely give us the platform to grow in a rapid way, I believe, from now on, you know.
It'll probably get to the point where there probably will be one of everything nearly available from that central warehouse too. Like, I'm sure the range of products being shipped is staggering.
Yeah. I suppose that was the first thing that opened my eyes, is you have everything from paint for pitches to perfume to rings to clothing to, everything. It's just fascinating. And I think a testament to the businesses in Ireland that there's such a diverse range of products and small businesses out there that can really take advantage of a business like One Stop Fulfillment by outsourcing their logistics completely, you know.
And just looking here at One Stop Fulfillment's website as well, like, I mean, some of the key points, like there's only one fee, basically the only fee charged is a fee per parcel, as opposed to different fees for all the different elements, which I think for a lot of small business owners is a thing, that you have to buy your own packaging, then you have to buy, you put in the product in, then you have to pay for the distribution or even the haulage across to a warehouse as well.
Yes.
But also no storage fees up to 90 days, and after that it's a minimal fee, so it really has become an attractive business for people to use. Are you beginning to see that as well, the impact it's having, or potential opportunities it offers for smaller Indigenous businesses?
Yeah, for sure. You know, particularly around the growth of e-commerce businesses over COVID, you know, it thrived. And what it allowed them to do is outsource their logistics and shipment of parcels to focus on the main part of their business, is buying the product and making sure they can get it to market, you know. So it is. So, from our point of view, it's a complete logistics solution, and we like to keep it simple.
That's brilliant. But it's great to hear of two local businesses coming together like that, and also helping other local businesses too. And going back to your own company, or the original company, Camsaw, then, I mean, people will probably be pleasantly surprised to hear of the level of business you're doing in that sector. Where are things going with that? Like, is there no end to people's buying garden equipment, and are people just getting more adventurous, or what's current, what's trending
in
gardening machinery at the minute?
I think the most questions I've been asked is my focus going to come off Camsaw? And fundamentally it's not, no. But we've built a successful business over the last 18 years, and we've a great team, my wife Frances included, and without that team around me, it wouldn't have made it possible, you know. So the trend, I suppose, we've had a boom for sure over COVID, you know. Everybody was in their garden, and that boom certainly has dwindled a little bit. But from our point of view, we focus on innovation, and we're launching a lot of new products. In fact, just last week we had our dealer event for 2023 to launch our program of product portfolio, of product range, to our customers for next year season. So robotics is becoming a big thing for sure, and there's some very important players in the market at the moment that we'll hopefully disrupt in the near future anyway.
I'd be very curious to find what sort of innovations are coming in terms of lawnmowers. Like, I mean, are we effectively, you just won't even look at your lawnmower from on, it'll just do its work and that's it?
Well, in fact, I'm just back from a show in Kentucky. I was there last week, and one of the things that caught my eye was the landscapers over there. Obviously, the territory they're cutting is larger, but this company had the vision where they were going to roll out 5 robots, and basically they just tackle the grass, you know. So, you know, technology is touching every industry at the moment, and it's the garden machinery industry is no different, you know, with the transition from petrol to battery being a big player in the market as well. You know, it's we certainly don't have time to sit in our laurels, you know.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting point because just later on, we're going to hear a little bit about the potential for exploring lithium mining down kind of Kilkenny, Carlow regions. But in terms of battery technology with gardening equipment, is it, you know, is it up there with the pace of change in terms of the electric cars and vehicles, or yeah, is it offering the power and the torque and stuff that people require?
Yeah. I think it is for sure, and we've been at the forefront of the battery products. We offer some very high-end commercial products in battery. I think the stumbling point at the start from the transition from petrol to battery in our game is that people have to realise they're paying for their fuel up front, that you don't have to put petrol into this product every week to use it, but that comes at an expense. You have to buy the battery day one. It is more expensive than the standard product, but over the lifetime of the product, it's much cheaper and, of course, cleaner for the environment.
So where do things go from here then? Are you planning another merger or acquisition, or have your eyes sort of scanning the market there, or what might be the next addition to the group, or is it time to just settle down now for a few years?
Well, I certainly think a time to settle is the order of the day, but you know, I'm ambitious, there's no question about it. We've built a great company in Camso, and we've acquired a great company in One Stop Fulfillment, and we will grow it significantly. But yeah, I certainly think I have an open mind on everything.
Absolutely, no, and that comes across in spades. You can hear it in your voice. I can see it here in the studio as you sit there. You're very, you know, deeply passionate about these businesses too. If you want to find out more about those, camsaw.ie, camsaw.ie, or onestopfulfillment.ie, two local Laois-based businesses. One has just bought the other out, still offering great service, creating more jobs, more employment, and offering huge opportunities there to local companies as well to kind of use that system and indeed to grow and extend their business that they're doing as well. Paul, all the very best to yourself and Francis and all the team there at both companies, and no doubt we'll hear more from you very soon.
Thank you very much, Ronan.
That's Paul Carney there from Camsaw, based in Port Arlington, and speaking there about their recent acquisition of onestopfulfillment.ie. And you probably do recall Shane Murphy of One Stop, you know, about a year ago, I think it was. I must check back what the day it was. Great to see that level of stuff happening in and local too, and all came about because of radio. So there you go, as if you didn't know that already. Radio is a fantastic medium and continues to be so. Huge levels of trust and huge levels of listenership and engagement too. So what are you waiting for? Still to come, whether lithium mining is something that we might see happening around the Midlands, or indeed quite close to the Midlands. That's coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. Before that though, I want to introduce you to another brand new business in Ballacolla in County Laois. It's located at Junction 3 Manorstone service station there at Ballacolla, and it was opened by Bernard Hennessy on the 8th of October. So very new, very fresh. And fresh is a word really that is synonymous with this business, because Woodlands Farm Shop is a startup food and beverage supply business. So let's try and find out some more about that. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Bernard Hennessy himself. Bernard, very good evening. Tell us more about what compelled you to go and open up a farm shop in Ballacolla.
Hi, Ronan. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. The idea for this, there's kind of like, we're farming all our lives. Like, we are farmers, we lived on the land, and if you see where we're based, the site has really developed over time. But as we were farming, like, we, like many farming families, have always had our own animals, eaten our own animals, and that's just the way it's been. And in the last couple of years, we started up a drinks brand called Moore's Drinks. We sell whiskey, gin and cream liqueur. I have to get that plug in as well. But
hello, Bernard, sorry.
Can you hear me?
Sorry, no, you just dropped out there for a couple of seconds. No, go ahead. You just mentioned the Moore's Whiskey brand. You got your plug in, don't worry.
Yeah, good. So we're part of this local Laois Taste group as part of that. And mingling in amongst those groups, you get to meet all the local suppliers and producers, which we now stock. Like, and some of these are award-winning, and they're all on our doorstep. Like, Muller and O'Connell is a local bakery. Abo Farm Foods do tarts and cakes. Grandstown Egg, Temptation Patisserie, which are chocolates. G's Jam, Omimo's chili hot sauces are made in Laois as well, and Merry Mill Oats as well. Like, you know, so having an outlet like we have, where we are, gives them and ourselves like a national shop front. We'll like we do our own meats, like you said. You can literally we can see the farmyards from the shop, which is always a nice thing to show to people. But what we now have is an artisan food store full with our local products, including our own meats, and you know that's where it all came from.
Absolutely, and I had the absolute pleasure there about 6 or 9 months ago of receiving a hamper of Laois Taste goods as a present, and it was absolutely stunning, and I think nearly all those little businesses you mentioned all had product in it, and there was indeed a bottle of Moore's Little Irish Whiskey as well, and
I have
to say, like, it really sometimes, you know, it showcases, and whilst a lot of people listening are probably aware of those products, or indeed aware of the quality food that's been produced locally, sometimes it really has to be shouted about and celebrated, and having those central points to distribute it. So take us through the store. It's only open about 2 weeks. If you walk in, what's the sort of ambience in it? What's the essence of the store? What kind of market are you aiming to try and attract?
Well, we're in a unique space because of where we're based. We're based off Junction 3 on the M8 motorway. So we do have a lot of passing traffic, but we do still have our local people coming in, looking for their local meats, looking for, looking to support local. It's when you walk in, you can just see everywhere across the store, and we have wood panels up, and, it's a nice country vibe in there. That was the kind of idea that we went for. So, that's kind of the vibe we're going for. But, like, I am finding that people are coming in and looking for local. I think people are, if you are able to tell a story about the product, they're hooked and they'll buy it, you know?
It is. It's absolutely, absolutely crucial. And I think what's really reaffirming is to hear that is continuing, particularly as we've kind of reverted back to sort of almost pre-COVID times, that people haven't lost that commitment indeed they've continued to appreciate the value of local produce too. So you've opened the shop anyway. How was opening weekend for you? And indeed, how has footfall been since that opening day?
Yeah, well, do you know what? It has been good. People are, you know, it's the people who are passing by are calling in. They don't know about the place and they're interested by it. Local people are being so good to just come in and support because they know what we're doing. Like, they get the ethos of the whole thing. So people are good to come in and support. But, like, actually, just going back on that point that you had there about, like, pre-COVID times and people supporting local, I actually feel that COVID has nearly encouraged people to shop local from back when the 5 kilometre radius was there, when you were nearly forced to shop local. It's nearly encouraged people more. And that's the common thread that we're finding with people. They're like, for example, one of our suppliers, the Abo Farm Foods, people are saying, oh, well, we tried those during COVID and now we're here to get them. You know, people are coming into our store specifically for the brands that we have, that's like they're coming in because we have that outlet for them now.
I think you can add to that as well, the fact that we were all locked in, as you say, within 5 kilometres and within 2 for a period as well. And sometimes you realise when your food had travelled more than you do most years, you kind of say, well, maybe I need to start looking at where my food is coming from initially and where I'm sourcing it from too. But you also will have an online offering then to coincide with the actual bricks and mortar shop.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, like most things now, everybody is online on their phone. So you have to make sure that your webpage and all of that is on its forefront. Like my two staff there, Michelle and Brandon, that was one of the big focus before we opened. Like the web shop was good to go long before the actual physical store was ready. So in that sense, it was a good place for us to just focus on what products we wanted and like where we wanted to put things. So, like, they were a great support in having all that ready. So, and as well as that, now we're trying to get ourselves set up for deliveries at the moment. So we have a delivery truck just getting set up. So hopefully in the next week or two, we'll be able to do things like that.
And it doesn't sound like that's going to be the end of it as well. I imagine you have more plans for the place.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Meeting all these producers, seeing the drive that they have and the things that they can do, we're trying to go down the route of being able to do all of these things ourselves. Not everything now, but, you know, to a degree of, you know, food, you know, prepared meals. I have an aunt there that's only mad to start doing jams and chutneys for us. We just need to get the space right, that in terms of a kitchenette or whatever it needs to be, that we can do all those things and hopefully push it to the next level. You know, you have to keep moving, you know.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't sound like you're going to stand still either, and it sounds quite like some other leash companies we spoke to just before the break too. But I'm going to take you back for briefly just to the whiskey too. Like, are you actually distilling that on your own land as well, or how are you going about creating the Moors whiskey?
No, we're actually getting that sourced at the moment because of the way it's brewed. It's a 3 and a 15 year blend. So we're starting with the Forefront and working our way back. Like, with the name Moors, we're actually in O'More County. So it's all that ethos and story about, you know, the clans of Laois and all that fighting for their freedom. So that's kind of the approach we went to. So that has been, like, a great experience as well. All this retail experience has been so new for us. So everything we're doing is such a learning curve. And having all the suppliers and, like, all the support from... actually, the county council as well. I heard there was an ad for Laois Leo there. Like, all those things, the local enterprise office, Laois taste groups, and family as well. You know, all those supports have been really great.
Sounds like a perfect blend of all together. And look, at lots of great people involved in it. But look, at Bernard, it's fabulous here. And all the very best with the new business too. I'm sure it's going to catch a lot of attention from people. It's a great location, but more importantly, great local produce available for people as well. And looking forward to hearing more about your plans in the years ahead. Thank you so much, Bernard.
Thanks so much, Ronan. So, like, just the last thing I'll just say is all of our socials, all our website, woodlandsfarmshop.ie, we're doing recipes, all our promotion, all our deals, woodlandsfarmshop.ie across everything. So it should be hopefully easy to find us there.
No, but it's nice. I look at the first part of the show was all about keeping it simple, plain language, woodlandsfarmshop.ie, nice and simple. That's the way to go. Darren Doyle would certainly agree with that. Bernard, it's in all the very best yourself and the family and everybody there. And we'll chat to you again.
Thanks,
soon.
Thanks, Ronan.
That's
talk to you again.
Bernard Hennessy there of woodlandsfarmshop.ie in Ballacolla. How great it is, isn't it, to hear about new businesses opening up and building upon, you know, years of farming there and looking at the food they were producing and the provenance of that food and then realizing the potential that's there with all those local suppliers around them and bringing that food to the very customers that are, you know, there's a demand, a huge demand created and built upon during COVID. So well done to everybody there. As Bernard mentioned, they are looking at getting a delivery van on the road. And before we spoke to Bernard, I talked to Paul Carney from Camsong. We're just speaking briefly about developments in gardening equipment. And of course, we talked about electric batteries and stuff like that. Of course, when it comes to making electric batteries for cars and for you know, heavy plant or indeed for that very equipment that we might use around the house or the garden, lithium is a key component of that. And did you know that lithium mining could become a thing? There is actually lithium deposits in Ireland. So find out after the break if that's something that might actually happen and could play a potential role in the development of electric batteries in this country. Apparently a new gold rush is on the horizon, the hunt to find white gold. That's the lithium that plays a critical role in the rechargeable batteries that all of us use in our everyday lives and indeed will continue to use more and more over the coming years. Lithium is a soft white metal. It's primarily mined and produced in countries including Australia, Chile and China. And actually, like a lot of things, just a handful of nations control most of the global supply. Yesterday, though, a British company, Technology Minerals, said that preliminary surveys at areas in County Waterford and County Wexford that is prospecting licence for have demonstrated high grades of lithium. So how likely is it that maybe lithium mining is something that could take place and indeed take place quite close to the Midlands? To find out more, Will Faulkner spoke on Midlands Today recently to John Cleary. John is a lecturer in analytical chemistry at SETU Carlow. He's originally from Shinrone. Here's what he has to say when Will put the question to him that are we likely or potentially likely to see lithium mining actually happening in this country?
Well, that's something I suppose that mining and exploration companies are very much engaged in examining at the moment. There is a known belt of pegmatite, which is one of the main minerals in which lithium is found, and that runs from kind of the South Dublin area, so the kind of North Wicklow Mountains, down along the Wicklow-Carlow border and further down into parts of Wexford and Waterford. And so that doesn't mean, you know, that viable levels of lithium would be found in all of that region. But, you know, there has been, over the last number of decades, really, there has been various phases of exploration, particularly in the what's currently known as the Avalonia project. So it's along that stretch of West Wicklow and East Carlow. Along the county boundary there, there's a fairly well explored area of deposits there, which again various companies have been involved with over the years, and different phases of exploration have happened. But the latest results that I've seen from the kind of exploratory drilling there would suggest that it probably is approaching levels of lithium where it would be potentially viable to mine.
Mm. And there are many reasons for the timing of this conversation, not just because of the success those companies have had. Indeed, there was a British company, Technology Minerals, that said its surveys in Waterford and Wexford have demonstrated high grades of lithium, but also the, I suppose, the geopolitical situation worldwide, where you can never be sure if you've only got your eggs in a small number of baskets, you can never be sure what the future holds. So, how do you get lithium out of the ground and into a battery?
Well, I suppose it depends on which part of the world you're talking about. A lot of the major lithium resources in different parts of the world, particularly in China and in South America, are in the form of brines, so salt flats where these are old ancient lakes which have dried out, and there's salt deposits basically with high levels of lithium. And so that's a kind of an extraction-based process based on, you know, adding water and then evaporating the water to recover the lithium and other materials. In this part of the world, we are looking at more kind of conventional processes, so as I said, identifying the right kind of minerals and essentially digging them up. And there is a fairly complicated process then for extracting the lithium and purifying the lithium, which we probably don't need to go into. So that would, you know, potentially involve lots of chemicals and processes that might make people nervous. Again, for the scale of deposits that we have in this country, it wouldn't be really clear at this stage whether a lot of processing would take place here or whether the mine would be simply extracted and then shipped to existing facilities for doing.
Lots of potential questions there too, and indeed I suppose the big one is, what will the value of those lithium deposits be? Maybe not this year, maybe not in 10 years' time, but maybe down the line as battery technology develops as well. But quite interesting, just kind of, I suppose, one to have on the radar and just see where that one develops and where it goes. Time for me to depart the hot seat and make way. Joe Cooney will be here after 8 p.m. with Country Roads. The podcast of today's show will be available on the Listen Back section on Midlands103.com from around midday tomorrow. Check it in, share with your friends, tell everybody else as well. Talk to you soon. Stay safe. Have a great week. Enjoy Halloween. Talk to you next Tuesday.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.